Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, September 26, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Brian?
You never introduced me first. So I was muted. I was muted, so you didn't hear my clicking.
I thought that
Kelly, thanks for having us. Good to be here.
I thought that was just a dramatic, like, Christopher Walken level pause before you said hello.
I was going to, like, try to do my Dave Main impression, but but that wasn't happening either. No. Anyway, good to be here. Thanks.
Thanks good so much stuff. For coming by. And also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
I'd be a happy person to be here.
It's that kind of show, everybody. Buckle up. So, John, I actually want to start with you, and this is a sneak peek, sort of an interview you did yesterday for Background Mode.
Yeah, I had an AI specialist, professor of psychology and cognitive science at the University of Connecticut, Dr. Susan Schneider, and we talked a lot about AI and consciousness, but at the end of the show, she remarked that governments are taking increasing concern about artificial intelligence and its impact on culture and society and privacy and security and forming committees and starting to think about legislation. And along the way, they're worried that the giant mega corporations that are doing this, like Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, are gaining a lot of power and money and influence and control over our technical lives, even probably maybe started a bit when, well, I think it was already in progress, but I think it was accelerated by the Facebook decision to develop its own currency. And all of a sudden the government of the world, the United States, especially maybe France and UK, are starting to figure out that giant companies are controlling our lives, control security of our phones, control a lot of money. Like Apple's got $250 billion in cash in the bank. I know they're going to net neutral. They have a lot of loans, cash neutral. They have a lot of outstanding loans that offset their cash. But if Apple needed to, they could come up with a couple $100 billion in an emergency. Whereas the federal government, the United States, I read, only has about $30 to $50 billion in cash at any one time in reserve. So what we're seeing, in my mind, is this increased scrutiny of the corporations talking breakups. Elizabeth Warren and others are talking about how these companies have too much power and control over our lives, too much money, and are dabbling in technologies that could fundamentally alter our culture and our society. Artificial intelligence agents. One of the things we talked about was chip implants and the issue of consciousness. So we tend to think about agents as external to ourselves, as machines in the sky in a big box. Mm-hmm. But artificial intelligence agents could be eventually reduced to the size of a chip that could be implanted in your brain, and with the right kind of neural connection, without endangering the human being, you could have an AI implanted in your brain. And so you would have the advantage of superpower capabilities and human consciousness and values and ethics combined into one entity. And at that point, you start to have a new species. And then the question comes up about who gets these chips and how decisions will be made by people who have the chips against people who don't have the chips. And all of a sudden, heck is going to break loose. And so governments are starting to look more and more at these corporations, breaking them up, transparency in their money, taxing them more to take advantage of it, worrying about their wealth oversight. And that article that Charlotte published this morning about France could force Apple and others to disclose how much profit they make, the effort by the EU to extract additional profits from Apple to cash in on this wealth, phenomenal wealth these companies are accumulating, are all part of this new technology awareness on the part of governments that's creating a new sort of a sea change in the relationship between governments of the world and the super technology giants of the world.
That's interesting.
No, that's a mouthful.
It kind of is. the tension between like governmental entities and non-governmental entities in whatever shape that takes, whether it's a corporation or a person. Brian, I know that's a thing that you give a lot of thought to on occasion.
Well, I do. It's an interesting topic. We are in such uncharted waters when it comes to the power that big tech companies have amassed. And I mean that actually in the broader context, like the Standard Oils, the railroad empires of old, the robber baron age, and all of the excesses that led to the Sherman Antitrust Act, and you know, eventually even leading to the breakup of Standard Oil, and then you know, cut to the
AT&T.
The breakup of AT&T, and you know, like those companies didn't have anywhere near the influence over our daily lives. They had this massive influence within their industry, right? There were anti-competitive issues in terms of consumers getting screwed by locking out competition. But today's tech companies, and you know, Apple in a way, Google in its way, Facebook in its way, those three companies in particular, the power. And really, Google and Facebook, to me the most, the power that they have is unprecedented. Mm-hmm. Absolutely and completely and totally and always unprecedented. And, we don't know how we're going to deal with that. I mean, because like we could deal with it by having, you know, civilization end. We could deal with it by entering into, you know, an era that William Gibson might have written about in 1994. we could end up going towards substantially increased regulation. We just don't know. I mean, there's just we are in unprecedented times in a thousand jillion ways.
Brian, I think the emphasis before had been on the success of corporations, and then the old Teddy Roosevelt meme, what's good for business is good for America. Mm-hmm. And what happened was there was a hands-off approach. Let's let these businesses thrive and flourish. Let's not regulate the internet. Let's not regulate these corporations because they're American success stories. I think I'm sensing there's a bit of a change in this mentality towards that now, towards alarm at the size and power of these companies.
Well, but it's the nature of their power and success. It's not just their power and success. It is the nature of that power and success, because Facebook affects societies, and not just society here in the United States, but society all over the world. And Facebook gets manipulated, and Facebook gets used mm-hmm. by mm-hmm. very bad folks to do very bad things. Mm-hmm. And Google has its own massive amount of influence, you know, like Google cooperating. Like we gave TMO, me in particular, but most of us at TMO gave Google an enormous amount of credit for pulling out of the Chinese market when they were going to be forced to enable Chinese censorship. Right. And rather than do that, they pulled out of the market. Well, now they're thinking about getting back into that market. And they're trying supposedly to get back into that market. And so, I mean, like there's just all kinds of things, like people at my doorbell and, you know, all kinds of things going on. We're in unprecedented times.
Yes,
and the power
absolutely.
Of these companies to either allow or to in turn promote certain agendas and cultural norms can have grave power over who gets elected. As opposed to you can go out and campaign and shake hands and go door to door all you want till you lose your voice and your hands are blistered. And then an internet thing can turn everything around. I get turn things against you or change the cultural norm to the point where all your effort and work is lost. And so candidates have to be not only savvy about politics, but they have to be savvy about tech, because behind the scenes, there could be movements against them that they're not aware of. And that's dangerous.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing that needs to be considered. And the other piece of it that's sort of worrisome to me, aside from the unprecedentedness of it, is the legislation of something like this by people who don't necessarily have a grip on the fundamentals of the technology that they are trying to legislate. Like, you know,
to its benefit, Congress does have groups of science consultants, and they do have people advising them about artificial intelligence technologies. Right. The problem is that it's very difficult to take the known technology and without even thinking about how it could morph and unexpected consequences, mm-hmm. just today's known technology, and translate that into effective, long duration, meaningful legislation that achieves the right kinds of goals, without being subject to being completely overturned or outmoded or sidestepped. That's the part of it. That's the problem. The process of legislation and creating laws was uniquely suited to, 18th, 19th, 20th century America. Mm-hmm. It seems to be having a little bit of trouble dealing with technology in 21st century.
Yeah. But also just making sure that the people who are in charge of passing laws about this or looking at breaking up these companies or putting some sort of regulations in place regarding these companies should have a very good idea of how they work. And having someone haul the CEO of one of these companies into a hearing and making a big show of it, and then saying to the head of Google, the CEO of Google, "Why is this happening on my iPhone?" makes me worry. So that's
just ask the Project Zero team. They'll tell you what's going on the iPhone.
Well, yeah, see, they know pretty well what you did there, John. I see it. So the thing, like, to me, that's the part I'm worried about. I mean, yes, the potential of this stuff and, weaponizing Facebook and all these kinds of things, like, yeah, they're problematic, but I feel like there's another set of problems that comes with having people try to legislate this who don't have a good grip on it. And I don't mean these are people who need to be able to develop apps that are powered by Facebook or develop, like, they don't have to be engineers in order to understand the basics of what's happening. Concepts to some of these folks, like, it's news to them, and that's the part that worries me.
The problem is that the technology of computers and software is modifying itself and moving forward at a faster pace than the governments can keep up with.
Right.
Than people can keep up with.
That's right. That's right. So we're already seeing artificial intelligence in a most primitive form, morphing and changing faster than humans can deal with. Mm-hmm. And maybe the only way to deal with that is to start shipping human beings who can then be smart enough to fight back and give us advice and counsel about what to do.
It's not just AI. It is technology. I mean, the iPhone was introduced 12 years ago. Before 12 years ago, we didn't have smartphones. And today, seemingly, life revolves around our smartphones. I mean, that sort of change is unprecedented.
And Apple controls the security of the phone. This mega corporation is trumping the federal government. That's why from time to time you see the FBI or other officials complain mildly that they'd like to have their own back doors, because they're frustrated with the ability of these large corporations to dictate the narrative about how public encryption will happen and what security is offered and how we live and how we secure our data. And the government doesn't get a chance to have a say in how that encryption and that security was controlled and managed, manipulated legislation. And now they're playing catch up, trying to figure out what to do about how these companies have set the stage. And then they're having a hard time.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm stuck with it is like, yeah, it would be nice if there were easy answers to this, but there aren't easy answers to this. And there are a lot of reasons why there aren't easy answers to this. So I'm interested in seeing how this evolves. I know both of you are as well. And as we find out more about it, I'm sure we will be back here on TDO to discuss it. Another thing I want to discuss is, Brian, you had an interesting moment recently with your shiny new Series 5 watch.
Yeah, I almost called the Ghostbusters, which is not at all true. So I'm driving.
I'm a little disappointed that it wasn't true, but yes, let's hear what happened.
This is an interesting thing. I had the infographic watch face on, but I had recently switched to the white one, which is new in iOS 6. Excuse me, watch OS 6, I call it. And driving along, it's very late. This is actually important because it's very late at night. There aren't a lot of cars on the road, meaning that there's not a lot of, you know, headlights here, there, and everywhere. And I'm driving through a neighborhood. It's relatively dark. And all of a sudden, I thought I had like a dog or a small child like rushing at my car from the driver's side door. And I was startled. And it was my watch face, which is now always on, reflecting in my driver's side window. And I, you know, catching it out of my peripheral vision, you know, when we don't know what we're seeing, we matrix and we try to figure out what we're seeing. That's one of the strengths and weaknesses of being human is that, you know, that we do this thing subconsciously. And just for like, just the way it moved. And this isn't normally an issue because, well, not only did I have a brighter watch face on, but it was behaving, my watch was behaving differently than it did before I had this always on Apple Watch Series 5.
Right.
And I can't imagine I'll ever have that problem again. You know, I experienced it. I learned from it. I'm not saying this is some sort of like, oh my God, the Apple Watch Series 5 is always on. It's terrible. Nothing like that.
Right.
It was an adjustment that I had to make though. And it was rather interesting. It was a rather interesting moment for a brief, you know, second or two.
Mm-hmm. And that was part of what I thought was notable about it was just because it was the always on, you know, yeah, out of the corner of your eye, it seems like it's at speed, you know, something moving towards you at speed can be alarming.
Yeah, exactly.
And in other, like, I could see this happening in lots of other ways. The thing it reminded me of was not that long ago, somehow, I use a wireless charging stand on my nightstand. And so my phone is kind of upright instead of laying flat. And I had it at just the right angle. I had the TV on. And when the TV would show something lighter, because the room was dark, when the TV would show something with a lighter background, I kept looking over at my phone, trying to figure out why my phone lit up. And it was just because my phone was reflecting the TV. And so, like, that was what it reminded me of, was like, is that an alert? Like, why did my phone just light up? Oh, actually, my phone didn't light up. But it was very late and I was very tired and I couldn't figure out what was going on. So.
Well, one of the things that made me think about was that so I like having the always on watch. I like the fact basically that I don't have to wait that half second or that split second for the face to start giving me information when I raise my wrist, because it's part of that information is already there. Mm-hmm. Although I will note, by the way, that the compass complication is not active in always on mode, for instance. Some complications are active. Some appear not to be active. So, for instance, the moon phase also appears to be inactive. Although I can't.
Brian, I have a question for you. That. I have a question.
Sure.
I have a Series 4 like you had a Series 4.
Yeah.
And what inquiring minds want to know is the always on face so darn useful, so compelling, that you just had to go out and buy another watch right after you bought the Series 4 last year? Was that a driving issue?
I wanted the always-on feature. That is so subjective because, you know, for some people, the answer will be yes. And for some people, the answer will be that no, that's ridiculous. There. I think we had we posted a link to a teardown of the Series 5 today. It's got the same CPU in it, the same GPU. There's the two biggest features are always on and the compass. And I wanted to have the compass too, but it's not like I need it. Mm-hmm. Like, I do not need the compass. I just thought it was cool. And of course, I there's the added complication, if you'll pardon that word in this particular context, of needing to be able to write about it.
Yeah.
In a vacuum, I probably would not have upgraded. And I would even say, John, in answer to your question, in that vacuum, if I could somehow be Schrodinger's Apple Watch owner and both own and not own the Apple Watch, I think I would be I would be just fine not having upgraded.
Superposition of states. That's what they call it. Well, are there practical activities like exercising or writing where you want to be able to just turn your wrist and you were annoyed in the past?
That's a usability thing. Like, there's a couple of aspects of it. I cannot tell you how many hundreds, if not thousands of times I have activated my Apple Watch with my nose. You know, I'm washing dishes or cooking or, you know, you know, I'm doing maybe just both my hands are full.
And a delicious mental picture is forming in my mind.
Let's not
I've done that.
Delve into the mind of John Martellaro there.
I also control the music widget on my lock screen with my nose sometimes. Like if I'm mowing the yard. Yeah.
But this was something that I was very aware of. All the times that I've owned an Apple Watch, and I've often thought about that delay. And also sometimes, I don't know if it's the way I raise my wrist, but sometimes my Apple Watch wouldn't necessarily activate on its own.
Same here.
And I wanted to fix that. So to me, that was a compelling, it was a compelling feature.
Okay.
But again,
does Apple take your old watch on trade-in? I could offset a lot.
Like you can get up to $110 from Apple
for a Series 4, $110.
Series 4 stainless steel? No way, I'll sell it. Thanks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh gee, stainless steel. That's
like, well, no, it's like Apple
display, right?
My
Sapphire display alone is worth $100.
My to some people, but my I just saw you could get up to $110. So it wasn't that I could get 110 for my stainless steel.
So what did you pay for the, did you buy an Apple Watch Series 5 stainless and sapphire too?
I got the stainless, which comes with sapphire.
So that's what, $799?
I don't know. Why?
Oh, I'm just curious. Because the price would weigh in my mind about how important always on is.
Oh, so yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, and there's different... You know, different. I like the stainless. I like the stainless steel Apple Watch. I kind of wish I got into titanium, but and we're posting later today. We're going to be posting an unboxing video from John Keat of his ceramic Apple Watch Series 5.
I gotta tell you, I started off with the Series 0 stainless and sapphire, and the metal they used on the stainless was such that it would nick and lightly scratch. And so when I bought my Series 4, I backed up to aluminum and Ion-X glass. I have banged this Ion-X glass against a metal dumpster, against doorknobs, you name it, and it is still perfect. And Jeff Gammon put me onto that. And I'm very pleased with the durability of that X-Ion glass. It is tough.
Stainless steel starts at $699.
Yeah. Okay.
So let me actually finish the other thing to come out of my ghost story.
Yes.
And that was that I would like to have the option, because I use the Infographic watch face and I mm-hmm. love it. I'm back to the black one, I think.
Oh, I'm team Infographic all the way. Yeah. I need that fire hose all the time. Yes.
The white one was just too bright for me. It was too much. But I would love to have everything but the watch hands disappear in always on mode, at least to be able to have that option.
That's a cool thing. That's a cool idea. I like that. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it because the rest of that information in always on mode is useless.
Right.
I want all of the other information when I lift it up, the thing that I kind of want to grab out of the side of my eye without having to activate my Apple Watch is the time. Mm-hmm. Right. Is that reasonable?
Absolutely reasonable. And I like your idea of it being slightly less faded so that you can catch that out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah.
So here we are, Apple Watch Series 5, Watch OS 6, and we still don't have a digital face with digital seconds except the exercise face.
Correct.
Yeah, boy, does that annoy me. I've been complaining for years about how there needs to be a standard digital watch face with standard hours, minutes, and seconds. Well,
strap a Timex to your wrist and get it over with, man.
Or... you know, you can just build your own custom LED watch face where you can do... Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait.
Yeah. I've been trying to build custom watch faces for ages, and it's never going to happen, apparently. And I wish I knew why. Anyway. If you are with John and you are on Team Digital Seconds watch face, or if you have had a similar supernatural experience, who you're going to call in this case is TDO, by emailing observations@macobserver.com. you can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, or you can leave comments in the show notes. And I'm interested in how other people are using the always on display and enjoying the always on display. That seemed like the killer upgrade, and to me it didn't seem compelling enough at all, because I still am very much in love with my Series 4, so I didn't feel the need to upgrade this time around. I would like to thank both of you for being here today. Brian, thanks so much for coming by.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having us. Good times.
John, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I've been your host, Kelly Gamott. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. And in the meantime, be excellent to each other.